This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
It all started at the very beginning of seventh grade.
We're the Babysitter's Club. Call us if you need us. Bye!
What if you could, like, make one phone call and reach a whole bunch of good sitters at the same time?
Are you sure this thing actually works?
The Etsy shop I bought it from said it's fully operational.
Yeah, but it's 25 years old.
It's iconic.
Oh, my God! Good afternoon, Babysitter's Club.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and at home, Arvind Yuvaraj. Together, we are here today to review a series that came out, I think, now a couple of weeks ago. It is a Netflix original, and it is Babysitter's Club.
Yes. It is an adaptation of the really popular children's series. I think they started in the mid-80s and actually went on till 2000, I believe, by Anne M. Martin, by the same name, Babysitter's Club. I used to read them when I was really young, so I was very excited to know that they were doing an adaptation. And I think what's interesting about it is it's kind of pitched at a weird... It's not pitched at kids necessarily. It's almost like it's pitched at kids as well as their parents or other people who might like watching these kinds of stories. And so it actually turns out to be much more interesting than I thought it would be.
It uses the Shrek template. So if you watch it as a kid, then you get the cartoony jokes and stuff. But you watch it as an adult and there's a lot of stuff that flies over kids' heads. I had no idea that Babysitter's Club was even a thing. So I vaguely remembered the logo or seeing the logo, I don't know where, maybe bookstores or something. But I had no idea that something like this even existed. But I'm so, so happy that I do now.
I loved it. And I think that we did a whole thing about adaptations last week. So it's interesting that we're reviewing it this week because it is such a faithful and yet updated adaptation. And to your point, Sharmila, about who it's pitched at, I think it's pitched at readers of the book, which is to say that people who started reading it, you know, at the very beginning of its publication would now be adults. But you also have people who are now turning 10, 11 and discovering the books, whether old or new, for the first time. So it has that peculiar quality of managing to appeal. Basically, if you are the kind of person who would like to read these books, you are the kind of person who would enjoy this show. And I think that's what makes it work, because it's not talking down at any level, nor is it purposely making jokes that are clearly meant for adults. Mm.
So just to contextualize, the series is about a group of girls in a town called Stony Brook in Connecticut. Basically, a group of middle school girls who decide through various events that they're going to get together and start literally a babysitting club. But the club is kind of just a loose frame for the books and then the show to explore various issues relating to each of these girls, their personal lives, the struggles that they go through as they grow up. And you're right, Lynn, in saying that it is actually a very faithful adaptation. I thought they might update it to the point where they were just using the loose frame but doing something completely different. But no, they actually stick to the characters in the books. They stick to the issues that they go through. And what I really like is they even stuck to the... So the books, each book is narrated by a different character. And so you kind of get insight into that particular girl's issues and problems. The series does that too. So each episode is narrated by a different girl. And it's just such a beautiful, lovely, sweet time when you spend it with these characters.
Such a wholesome show.
Very much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that, you know, when you say updated, they updated so well. Mm-hmm. Not in a way where they're just like shoehorning words into the dialogue, like say TikTok or say Pinterest, you know, just because it's 2020.
Yeah.
It's the girls use technology and they use social media. They use Instagram, boosting ads on Instagram and you know, putting ads on Facebook. But they don't do it as a gimmick. they do it because it's part of their lives. And they know that Facebook exists and Instagram exists and they can use social media and stuff. And it's very natural to them. So when someone says, okay, I'm going to pull out something on Pinterest and I'm going to show you like ideas that I have, it's not done in a kind of a jokey way. And it's also not done, the dialogue isn't written by someone who doesn't understand what those things are. So it's very obvious that it's said and spoken the way kids would say and speak these kinds of things, which I really, really like from the show.
That, and it also acknowledges that kids are smart. You know, and so all the they call themselves women sometimes, which I really like, but all the girls basically speak in ways that feel natural to kids. So it's not, as you rightly point out, you know, it's not adult dialogue, but at the same time, they're not like, hi, I'm Christy. You know, there's no such, there's none of that kind of quality. They're all very, they feel very real to me. I think that that's what was so great about the show, is that they speak the way I would expect girls their age to speak. And more than that, I know who they are. You know, when I see them interact, when I see how one is really bossy, one is really artsy, but also secretly maybe a little bit worried about whether or not she's able to keep up with her, I don't know, highly intelligent robotic sister. They have all these different traits and they get to the point of these characters very quickly and then they're consistent. I think that that is the key with a fantastic TV show, is that the characters are super consistent and you have that here.
I think it reminded me when... So I don't often watch a lot of the children's content that's available on the various platforms just because I have no reason to. But over the weekend, I got to spend a little bit of time with my best friend's daughter, who's a huge fan of the Babysitter's Club, by the way. She's 9. But she was also showing me some of the other programs she was watching. Like, apparently there's a series of a TV series based on Richie Rich. So when you watch those things, I realized the far gulf between something like The Babysitter's Club, which you can let a 9-year-old watch, and things like this that are aimed squarely at them, because those shows really do what you just said. The whole, hi, I'm Richie, ha ha ha. But Babysitter's Club doesn't talk down to its audience. It also doesn't treat its characters like they're somehow lesser than its creators. So it's a very, it's a show that has its heart in the right place, I feel. That's the best way I can put it.
There's also a huge gap between the show, like Babysitter's Club, and the other shows that you have on Netflix, because I found it difficult the first couple of episodes as an adult watching something that's geared for kids and children to sort of tune my mind in a way that is very low investment. So in the first couple of episodes, I was listening to all the dialogue and I was like, does that mean something or is this a clue? when something mysterious happens, like someone goes upstairs, I'm like, oh no, something horrible is going to happen. But it's not, because it's a kid's show.
But you didn't read the books growing up, so...
Yeah, I have no context. And also, because it's on streaming, you are sort of... You're so emotionally scarred and traumatized by these shows that you always expect something really dark and really bad to happen. And I found myself thinking that the first couple of episodes, until I had to go like, look, I'm not going to invest that much. I'm going to take this very casually. And I'm just going to watch it as a show that's meant for years, what, 7 and up. I think that's the rating. So that's another thing. You can watch it as adult, but you have to sort of bring yourself down and take it as on a more casual level.
And yet, having said that, I think that the emotional stories that the show tries to tell are actually really emotional, right? So they have they have kids who are children of divorce. Mm-hmm. They have Mary Ann, for instance, her mom died when she was really young. And you have another, you have Stacey, who's dealing with health conditions. Mm-hmm. So I think in each of that, while I agree, the stakes are so low, you know, at the end of the day that 90%, you're reasonably sure this episode's going to end with a hug. Nevertheless, I do think that the way that they deal with the emotional beats of the show, they do that really well, because you are genuinely thinking, oh no, I hope you guys make up. I hope that you reach a proper understanding. But never are you worried that someone is going to move away or that somebody, you know, somehow this whole thing's going to end.
Yeah, I think it's because the show treats these emotions as real. The show treats and recognizes and understands that when you were that age and you were feeling them, they were no less big and important to you as your emotions now might be. So when someone's friend isn't talking to them anymore, or when a boy you like isn't responding, or when your mom, you think your mom maybe might not love you as much as she used to. Those are really big things for anyone to go through. And the show doesn't play that down. The show also doesn't play it for cheap thrills. It plays it really well. And I also like, you know, little things like a hug or, two girls reaching for each other's arms or looking at something and laughing together. I think there's a lot of power in watching that being played out in a way that is real and not just playing to the camera.
Yeah, they never underestimate anyone on the show. Even if you think that that person's like a problem, if it's a strict dad or like a strict parent or whatever, they never downplay or sort of undermine those people. At the same time, they never downplay or undermine the kids themselves.
We're talking today about The Babysitter's Club, which is an adaptation of the book series of the same name. It's 10 episodes. It's on Netflix. Have you watched it? Are you a big fan of the books, you know, when you were younger or still now? You can let us know by WhatsApping 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Christy, I know how much you like to be in control.
About Watson, it's going to be a part of your family, whether you like it or not.
I'm Dawn. I just moved here from L.A.
I'm chill, but I don't back down from a challenge.
It's me, Claudia Kishi. I'm good at a lot of things.
Most of all, I'm good at art.
Hey, I'm Stacy.
We need to differentiate ourselves from the competition.
I can figure out the best ratio of click-throughs to investment. I'm pretty good at math.
Hi, I'm Marianne.
Talking to people I don't know makes my stomach fall out of my nose.
I started the Babysitter's Club to take care of kids. But what I realized, we were more than a club. We were best friends. Babysitter's
Club! Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. And together we're reviewing The Babysitter's Club. I wanted to start off this bit of the show by asking you guys how you felt about the performances, because there are a lot of different characters that get played. You start off with four main girls at the beginning, and then halfway through you expand to five, mm-hmm. and then right at the end of the series you pick up two more.
Yeah.
So which brings you to the full cohort of seven girls. But what did you guys think of the performances, both of the kids as well as the adults?
Well, we haven't even gotten to the adults, which I hope we will later. But I must say that not every one of the actresses who played the young girls were equally good. So sometimes in individual stories or scenes, not everyone is as strong. But the show has this beautiful thing where as a group, they work so well that just when you start thinking, oh, I maybe am not as invested in this particular story because this girl is not as good in the way she plays the role, you suddenly come back to a group scene or a scene with a few of them doing something together, and then it doesn't really matter anymore because you're just swept away by that dynamic. So I think the chemistry really pulls the show through.
So acting-wise, like my favorite is Karen. Karen's the stepsister who's meant to be the stepsister.
Oh, she's amazing. Lovely. Yes, yeah. She's not even one of the club, but yeah.
Yeah. So I love how she plays it. I love the actor who plays her. It's so good because she's going through like a dark phase and she's kind of like, melancholic or melodramatic and stuff. And so she's my favorite, definitely number one by far. And I think after that, like the girls, like you said, they work as a unit. So when they work together, they work really well. And then there are a couple of good performances by the adults, especially like Alicia Silverstone, who I didn't know was in this show. And I was like, is that Alicia Silverstone?
Playing a mother. Yeah.
A mother of four. Yeah. A mother of four teenagers. So definitely. But Karen, by far, my favorite.
Yeah, I think that I'm inclined to agree that the performances, I think it's not even down to individual performances. Sometimes it's episode to episode. So I think that even the actresses who were performing the main roles, there were some things that I think they were clearly more comfortable with or better at. And that could vary on an episode-to-episode basis, which means that in the wash, overall, I think the performances were solid, especially not, especially because, as you point out, when they're all together and they're talking and they're just kind of interacting with one another and you're able to see how the dynamics play out, it does it really well, really smoothly, and that just works. Now, for the adults, yeah, Alicia Silverstone got me, you guys. I mean, she was just so good. But I think also the other actors who were playing the parents, I believed, A, that they were parents, but I also believed that they were adults with their own lives, motivations, and desires. And I think that that's important, because if you are a 10-year-old watching this, I think it's not a bad idea to have this acknowledgement that your parents are also people. You know, they're not just the people who bring you a drink when you need it, or food, or, you know, like, so they're, every character is really, or at least decently, well-rounded.
I think that's actually a great point, because generally, and again, I go back to the more generic kid-focused shows. I guess Richie Rich is on my mind. But the parents in those tend to be very cardboard cutout. They're just there to kind of exist around the kids. But this show is not that. It actually shows full lives and also how that intersects with these children. So I can understand why someone like Alicia Silverstone might want to be in this show, or even Mark Evan Jackson, who plays Marianne's father.
He does such a good job.
Because they get good roles. They're not just there to, you know, say a couple of funny lines and exit scene. And it was great fun. I thought the adults actually did added a lot to the stories.
So I think this is a recurring theme this week, where I tend to relate with the adults a bit.
What
more
is going on, Arvin?
I don't know. So there's this episode, without spoiling anything, there's an episode where they go to camp, and there's like the camp, I don't know what you would call her,
director?
Like an organizer, like director,
Meanie.
Camp director.
Meanie, yeah, that's right. Lamina Meanie.
And she goes, she says that I've been a camp director for like 26 years, and these kids are like, you know, giving her a hard time. And I'm like, man, 26 years is a long time. Just leave her alone. You know, she just wants to do a job.
You know, I'm with you, because I was like, protest is all well and good, kids, but you wait. And I'm like, no, don't be that person.
Yeah, which is not the way it's supposed to be. The show's not engineered for that. She's supposed to be someone who's like sort of quote-unquote given up on life. But I'm just sitting there like, man, life's tough, you know, you don't know.
But no, I agree though, because I think that if you've ever seen a teen movie that takes place in a camp, generally speaking, the camp directors are uniformly not great.
The literal meanies.
Yes, yes. And they don't care about the kids who are under their care. They really are there. In a way, it's a stereotype also of high school teachers, right? It's the classic adult who just doesn't really care, doing kind of a dead-end job. But she makes it clear slowly that that's not who she is. The episode allows her to have that space to show that, no, you guys, I care. I acknowledge that there are issues. I'm just an adult doing my best, you know, and that comes through. And you're right. I mean, I was ready to make fun of you, but Meanie is a very empathetic character.
No, but the I'm just an adult trying to get through life is actually all of their parents, no? And for a show that's focused on the kids so much, even with the few scenes that each of the parents get in their episodes, I mean, you get that. There was a particular scene involving Marianne's dad, because he's the one whose wife died when she was very young. I mean, I was moved to tears, because they're just so good at showing that life, that inner life of adults, which the kids may not see. But I think now us as adults can actually empathize with.
I mean, Meanie has dental problems. Like, she goes to get her tooth fixed. And the first thing that came to mind was like, man, that sounds expensive. Like, I hope she has like funds for a rainy day.
You're having a week of it, aren't you?
but also at the same time, like, you know, with the stuff with the adults and how they portray everyone, it is a very progressive show, which is another thing. There are a lot of progressive themes in the show that they don't shy away from. Difficult themes that are sort of filtered down to be understood by kids who are watching, but also not dumbed down. So it is, I wouldn't say diluted. It's made easy for, you know, it's made more accessible for their audience, but it's also not dumbed down. So I was surprised to see how many things they bring up that are like really big themes that you would see in shows made for adults that made its way onto these shows, which I was also really happy to see, because it is a very, very progressive show.
I think a lot of shows can learn a lot from the Babysitter's Club. And this is going to be a funny thing to say in terms of how to do diversity, how to do hot button issues, how to do inclusivity in a way that doesn't feel too PC, or like it's being just that they're virtue signaling. It feels like a show that does it because it's important to the story.
And I think that, you know, just as a very, very long time ago, shows would have an episode on an adoption or someone suddenly realizing that, like, yeah, that's right, I'm adopted, you know, and make a very big deal about this because it was seen as important that children are able to relate to that kind of story. And now it's like, whatever. that's thankfully, I think thankfully those shows began it, and now it's just kind of passé, right? Like, it's just a part of it. And I think this show treats the themes of inclusion in very much the same way. They're important, but it's not highlighted like, witness me, you know, it doesn't have that quality. Instead, it's just, listen, you know, there are different types of families, you know, and people might be coming to school and they look fine, but they're coming in with different types of stories. And it's just a by the by. You don't have to make a big song and dance about it, which actually, to throw it back to a show that you guys liked less than I did, I think Never Have I Ever actually did a good job in the same way. Although I would say Babysitter's Club is definitely a more even show overall.
Oh, yeah. I actually literally had Never Have I Ever in mind when I watched Babysitter's Club, and I thought, well, I wish they had done it this way.
Mm. Same. I wish they had followed like that template. Mm. Also, this is one of those, it's such a casual show that I don't know if I want to watch a season two, but if there was a season two, I would definitely watch it.
Season two and three and four. Like, I'm on.
Yeah, I would 100% binge on a season two, but it's so good as like a season that I wouldn't say I don't actually care. There's nothing more to want, if that makes sense. Mm.
This show was like Enya for my brain. just putting it on at the end of the day and feeling good about being back in Stony Brook with these incredibly earnest characters and their sweet stories and the emotional resolution that you get with each episode. I think it's format TV at its best, you know. In many ways, it does the thing that television is supposed to do. I didn't think that we would emerge saying Babysitter's Club is one of Netflix's most even and, you know, high quality offerings, but I really believe that it is. I think that Netflix traditionally has a problem with sustaining energy when it comes to its TV shows across the span of 10 episodes or however many that they tend to do. And Babysitter's Club just does it.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think, you know, by some dint of luck, maybe, it's because it has all of these characters and the stories come pre-baked, right? They're from the book. So all you need to do is tell them well in today's world. And I think luckily they've gotten the creators and the writers who are able to do that. I think this is a great show. I would highly recommend it to anyone, whether you have kids or not, whether you read the books or not, whether you're a boy or a girl. I think really if you want some joy and sweetness and just a little bit of nostalgia in your life, you can't go wrong with this one.
So let us know if you have watched The Babysitter's Club, if you plan to, if you've read the books. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And as always, you can also write to us at movies@bfm.my and find us at BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.